Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Webster Support Technical Exchange conference call. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Kathy Kuhn. Thank you, and you may begin your conference.
Welcome, everyone, to this Webster Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is CICS Web Services Part 2 Deployment. CICS Web Services Part 1 Development was held on November 4, 2014, and a recording of that session is also available on the previous webcast tab for the Webster Support Technical Exchange site. Today's presenters are Dave Key and James O'Grady. Dave joined IBM in 1985. He specialized as a systems tester in application and integration middleware products on DOS, primarily CICS, but also including Webster MQ and OmegaMon. His main area of expertise includes large system management and security. James joined IBM in October 2006 after working for clients since 2000. In his career at IBM, James has worked as a tester specializing in web services, covering topics from binary attachments and SOAP messages to interoperability to WS security. He recently completed updating another web services IBM Redbook, for which he has the technical lead. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Dave.
Good afternoon. As Kathy just mentioned, my name's David Key. Hopefully I'll be clear enough. Kathy, if we can move on to page two. Just to give a little bit of an overview of where we are and where we'll be going with this presentation. As Kathy mentioned, Paul Cooper had already done a part one to this. So this presentation will largely be start off with a recap on web services and then follow through looking at the way in which web services can be used in terms of deployment. Partially, that will be to do with the way in which it's integrated into a large system, use of workload management and high availability, but also in terms of the application of security. As you can hopefully see on the agenda, a significant portion of the presentation will be addressing some of the new functions of security, particularly those of the Security Assertion Markup Language, or SAML, and the Kerberos tickets. The other part of the presentation that we'll cover will actually be the way in which Kix actually uses the new Kix Explorer and the cloud application technology to work with web services to improve the deployment of your applications. All right, so if we could move on to page three, please. This is just a general overview here of some of the useful resources. There are a fairly significant number of red books available, some of which have been recently updated or are in the process of being updated. For example, development here, there is a new edition of that has been updated and will be hopefully available soon, which will cover some of the aspects here of the use of the web services in cloud. Also, you'll notice there's a cloud enabling Kix book, which gives you a lot more in depth about the strategy that IBM and in particular the Kix transaction server product is actually following in use of cloud enablement in terms of resource and deployment. There's some quite interesting areas there which are well worth investigating, particularly in terms of maintaining the sort of the reliability and high availability of your systems, and hence why we come on to that in a little part. If we could then move on to page four, we'll go through a little bit of an overview of the way in which web services are typically viewed, the way they work. So here we have a typical web service scenario, or basically following on from the standard sort of logic of the SOA, where you're actually got the web service coming in and then splitting out integration logic and business logic through to the data itself. In that scenario, that being a service provider, which we'll be talking about a bit later, and then in a second scenario, where Kix program is actually requesting web services support, in which case it becomes the service requester. You'll notice in there as well things like data power and stuff like that in the terms of the requester and the actual provider of the actual web services. They actually become quite useful tools, which we'll address a little bit later, particularly with things like Kerberos and so forth. Okay, if we can move on to page 5, please. By the way, if I'm talking too fast, it's a habit of mine, I'm afraid, so please tell me to slow down or anything like that. I'm afraid it's a little bit of a cluttered page, but there's a lot going on here, so if you'll give me a little bit of a chance here. The main idea of this chart really is this one I owe my colleague Nigel Williams, who actually presented this this chart and in fact this whole presentation in the past, of which this is an updated version. Comes of my thanks to him for that. And here we're looking at the service provider where the request is coming in here. The thing that's probably most important to look at here in terms of in terms of deployment and in terms of the way in which we're going to look at security, are some of the main resources and the way in which they're affected. In the larger central blue box, you'll notice there are four white squares or rectangles, rather, the TCP/IP service, your IMAP pipeline, and web service themselves. These are KIX resources which control the way in which the request coming into KIX is handled and the way in which it'll be processed. Some of these are generic resources, or can be generic resources. Some of them are very specific to the way in which you want an application to behave. And that has quite significant implications in terms of deployment and the way you approach it. Another thing that's probably worth mentioning here is that underlying these here, you'll notice slightly to the left, hopefully, of that big blue KIX TS box is slightly colored, is the data on HFS. And here you have the pipeline configuration, the WSDL, and the WSBind file. All of those actually stored in the HFS file system. The WSDL, which contains the definitions of the operations for each operation input message and optional output messages, the structure, and this is XML data and schema, and we'll be coming on to some examples of those, although they are just examples a bit later. But this is where a lot of the definition of the way in which your security is set up and the way that it is handled will, by the pipeline, come through. And in fact, one of the nice things that we'll come to a little bit later in the pipeline is the ability through the KIX Explorer to actually directly look from a KIX resource straight through to HFS data and actually see what the pipeline configuration is. This is a part of the ZOSMF capability, which has been integrated with the Explorer. So, as I say, basically you're coming through. Let me just see if I can work this out. I'm trying to remember my own script here. That the KIX Applied Socket Listener, which is CSOL, which is the box to the top left of the KIX TS blue box, and slightly covered by Socket Listener, so there we go. Monitors the port specified in the TCP/IP service resource definition for the incoming HTTP requests. When the socket message arrives, QSOL will attach the transaction specified in the transaction attribute of the TCP/IP service definition. Normally, this is actually a KIX supplied web attached transaction, CWXN. CWXN finds the URI in HTTP request and then scans the URI map resource definitions for a URI map that has its usage set to the pipeline and its path set to the URI found in the HTTP request. If CWXN finds such a URI map, it uses the pipeline and web services attributes of the URI map definition to get the name of the pipeline and the web services definitions, which will be used to process the incoming request. CWXN also uses the transaction attribute of the URI map definition to determine the name of the transaction that it should attach to process the pipeline. Normally, this would be the CPIH transaction. There are other examples where you may wish to change the name of that, but just for default and for the moment, we'll use CPIH. And the CPIH itself starts the pipeline processing. It uses the pipeline definition to find the name of the pipeline configuration file, and then CPIH uses that configuration file to determine the message handler programs to invoke. A message handler in the pipeline, typically here a KIX supplied SOAP message handler, removes the SOAP envelope from the inbound request and passes the SOAP body to the data mapper function. A user written message handler can also be added to the pipeline, for example, to change the transaction ID or user ID. Kix uses channels and containers to pass data between the message handlers of a pipeline. The DFHWS-web service container is used to pass the name of the required web service definition to the data mapper. The data mapper uses the web service definition to locate the main storage control box that it needs to map the inbound service request in XML to a COM area or a container. There are some of these containers that are particularly useful, things like DFHWS-URI, which is the URI for service, dash web service, the resource name, the SOAP level, the actual version of SOAP, DFH request and response to actually what's actually fed back. Also, later we'll come on to these as well. There's a couple of these here, which is DFHWS-TRANID, which is the pipeline alias transaction ID, and that gives you the ability of going to change the actual the transaction you're going to be running from this point. And DFHWS-UserID, obviously something which is particularly relevant when we're talking about security and the ability to change that. And we give an example, if I remember correctly, a little bit later in SAML of use of that. Also, when we start talking about the SAML processing, we'll also be discussing another channel which may be of use to you, and that's DFH transaction, but we'll come on to that later. Right. Coming back to the data mapper, the data mapper itself links to the target service provider. Service provider application program, providing it with input in the format that it's expecting. The application program is not aware that it's being executed as a web service. The program performs its normal processing and returns an output COM area or container to the data mapper. And this is again coming back to that sort of the earlier chart there where we have the separation of the business logic and the transport layer. It's worth noting that when the Kix web service assistant has been used, the web service and URI map definitions can be created automatically when the pipeline resource is installed. Or you can create it manually in the CSD or, as we'll come on to a minute, via the cloud application, or if you wanted to, through some of the other CPCM resources. But we're actually going to focus particularly here in this presentation on some of the new features, and in that case it's the use of the Explorer and the use of the of cloud applications. Right, if we could move on now to page number 6. As we saw earlier on as well, the other side to this, once processing has been done inside Kix, you have the ability to use a web service as a Kix service requester and actually send business logic out through the web service. In this case, when the service requester issues an exec Kix invoke web service command, Kix uses the information found in the WS bind file that is associated with the specified web service definition to find the target URI and to convert the language structure into an XML document. Kix then invokes the message handler specified in the pipeline configuration file, and they convert the XML document into a SOAP message. Kix sends the SOAP request message to the remote service provider via either HTTP or HTTPS or via MQ. A URI can be specified on the invoke web service command. If specified, it supersedes any URI specified in the WS bind file. A URI map resource can be used to specify the transport-related security information. When the SOAP response message is received, Kix passes it back through the pipeline. The message handlers extract the SOAP body from the SOAP envelope, and the data mapping function converts the XML in the SOAP body into a language structure, which is passed the application program in the container DFHWS-data.
Moving on to slide 7.
That's correct, thank you. Right, so in the previous pages, we've actually gone through a bit of an overview of the way in which web services operate with Kix in terms of both the provider and the requester. And from the next stage, we're going to start looking at the way in which some of the planning considerations that come in here with regard to security, which gives us a starting point for the more in-depth sections on SAML and Kerberos that we'll approach later. Earlier in the Kix service, earlier when we were talking about Kix as a service provider, we mentioned URI map, the transaction CPIH. it's worth noting that if you are using secure authentication, then Kix will perform authentication processing at this stage. So, for example, if you're using an ICRX as part of your security authentication, at this point, a second instance of CPIH would actually be started. So the ICRX will run under, initially, CPIH will run under the default user that you've come in on, and the second instance of CPIH will actually be mapped by RACF to the user ID associated with that ICRX. That's just as an example there. But it's worth noting the fact that CPIH, you may wind up with multiple instances of these. And that's particularly noticeable if you're actually trying to use some, for example, transaction tracking, as you'll see there's multiple starts in there. Excuse me. Anyway, to security planning considerations here. Some of the main things you need to consider here are actually, as I say, where that authentication is done and how you're actually going to assert and enable that level of trust. The actual message itself, whether you're actually securing it in terms of the sort of SSL across the actual connection, but also there are multiple ways of determining the form of security that you actually wish to use. Main thing on here I want to stress is whether you actually use WS security and WS trust transport in the transport security or to actually use both. If we can move on to page 8. the way I phrased that may not have made it sound like it, but believe it or not, like in most of these things, actually keeping it simple is actually the best policy. It's one of those dangers that overcomplicated security processes actually have a tendency to actually lead to too many windows, and prior planning of exactly what level of authority and authentication you require is very important here. And so there's an example here in relatively secure areas. Yeah, and in fact, actually, one thing that is quite important, what I mentioned at the very beginning when the web tests are coming in, is the use of the data power box. That actually gives you an awful lot of capability in terms of securing and using, for example, an LDAP server to actually do the authentication outside of Kix. And then to package that up in a secure fashion so that the user ID can be brought through to Kix securely without having to go through additional processing. And also in some cases, for example, the ICRX, not having to define every single user ID that's actually coming from a distributed platform through to Kix to give them their own individual RACF user ID. Again, mentioning a little bit back on transaction tracking, there is the ability there to actually have to actually track through and identify the identity that's come through in terms of distributed platform in the actual task, and although actually running under a shared or a common user ID using RACF mapping. So there, using that cryptographic hardware actually to perform, to actually maximise that performance across SSL. And WS Secure and WS Trust can be used for more advanced requirements. WS Security enabling that message level authentication, data integrity, and as we say, Kix supporting WS Security username tokens and the X509 certificates natively. And in 5.2, we also have the ability to actually support things like Kerberos tickets. Sorry. My brain going a little bit loose there. Kerberos tickets. And here is that interoperability with a secure token service, a security token service, that can be either external in most cases, certainly on earlier releases of Kix, it has to be. However, when we come to SAML, we actually provide an ability to actually do a security token service actually inside Kix itself. And that has some implications for the way in which you manage the deployment of those resources, which we'll come on to. And so there, consider using WebSphere data power for internet solutions. Certainly, it offloads a significant amount of some of the expensive operations and the actual XML processing. And if we can move on to page 9. I should note, by the way, I didn't mention it in passing the previous chart just there, that where there's a relevant red book, we've tried to put a little link by putting a picture of it in the top corner, and that'll carry on through. Excuse me. Right, on this one, I mentioned there about trying to actually be efficient in the use of and sharing the resources. Workload and availability, the concept of high availability and of actually managing the workload. Using CPIH gives you workload management in the OS to actually look at the transaction and Apt-JS response time goals here. That's one of the places where you may wish to actually change the transaction so that different web services coming in actually run under different, using different pipelines with different transactions, and you can set different response time goals at that point. But here, using our WOR, basically a web owning region, this could be also a TOR as well, but you may wish to dedicate them for different performance reasons and so forth. A set of KIX regions handled using Sysplex distributor for TCP/IP based at work, or coming through an MQ shared queue if you're actually using WebSphere MQ's process. Coming through and then using traditional KIX routing mechanisms to actually go through to multiple AORs. To the data, again, the break between sort of the layers. One of the things to be aware of is that when you actually come into KIX in that WOR, you're actually coming in with a piece of XML, and there's a fair amount of processing at that point. We therefore generally would recommend you to use the DPL, Dynamic Program Link, to go across to the AORs, rather than actually using distributed programming, as opposed to dynamic transaction routing. Part of the reason for that is that it's a cleaner way of doing it in the first place, but also it actually reduces the amount of processing, and it does allow you to tailor the WORs and the AORs to suit the appropriate type of processing they're going to be doing, rather than shipping large amounts of XML, which is going to have to be reanalyzed in the AOR, keeping it in the WOR and tailoring the WORs to handle that processing properly. If we can now move on to page number 10, please. I'm just trying to keep an eye on the time. Highly available to robust web services infrastructure. Sysplex distributor using TCP/IP and port sharing, MQQ sharing to workload manage the connections. TPSM, which I hadn't mentioned at this point, but I should have done really. KIXplex SM, so the supply with KIX to actually dynamically route the requests after so much has been processed here. You can use that with, depending on how you want to do it, with goal mode or with link neutral. So if you're not particularly worried about the types of links you have or whether you have multiple LPARs. And then using monitoring tools like a Megamon for actually tracking against the service response time goals. So here, that's where, as I said, using the private pipeline transaction, setting WLM, in this case, this is the ZOS WLM goals for monitoring statistics. And that's coming back, as you said, quite early on to that container and the DFA's WS-TRAN ID in the message handling program. Excuse me. Oh, dear. Hopefully I'm going to get to the end of this. and again, DPL routing is preferred to transaction routing. It is generally considered much more efficient. If we can move on to page 11, please. Now, up to this point, I've been talking exclusively about the way in which the pipeline resources and the web service report resources work, and a little bit about the way in which they interact with the security and the way in which you would view it in terms of high availability, so having multiple WORs routing through to multiple AORs. In KIX version 5, there's a significant improvements in the way in which what we've called the cloud enablement of KIX, the use of KIX applications in terms of cloud applications and in terms of platforms. these actually build upon some of the infrastructure capability that Kixplex SN uses in terms of sort of grouping of systems into those logical groups of WRs, AORs, and so forth. But it also takes things a little bit further, and there are quite a few enhancements in terms of application to ensure that when deploying resources, you are actually deploying things as an entity, so that you know that all the resources required for your application are available and will deploy together. So I'm not going to go too much into cloud itself here, but the way in which you'd approach this is generally through the Explorer. It is possible to do it outside, but we would generally very strongly recommend, and it's tailored. The Kix Explorer has the capability to allow you to define the work, and it also has a specific perspective defined to allow you to view it. So what I've done here is to open up an example of a Kix Explorer pane and open up the Kix Cloud perspective. The main part here is that, like, in the same way that the CSD has groups and that you deploy resources and define resources to them, using this offline cloud application, you can define bundles. Those bundles can contain resources. In the early versions of Kix Cloud applications, they were pretty much limited to the resources that, for example, files, programs, transactions. But in version 5 and certainly in version 5.2, there's been an extension to this to allow you to define the actual resources required for your web services. So, for example, your URI map, your pipeline, and everything can now be defined through the Explorer as part of your application. Just looking a little bit more on this one, where I've shown here the Cloud Explorer and the Project Explorer. The Cloud Explorer view shows you those applications and the region types. The region types here are the cloud implementation of the logical grouping of Kix resources, and the Project Explorer here showing you what is actually available and in terms of applications and policies, and in terms of platforms that can be deployed and used inside your Kixplex. We can move on to page 12, please. So this is just a little bit of a breakdown from one of the manuals. The application itself, in resource terms, is an Apple Dev. I mean, it has a full 64-character name to allow you to clearly identify the application, but for the purpose of this, inside that application, I can have entry points which allow me to actually say what I want to link things together and notify on, and that's one of the extensions. The reason that's a question mark that's URI map is not because it's questionable, but because of the fact that it's an optional thing you can do. You can now make a URI map an entry point actually into your application. You can also, in your application bundles, you can actually now create those Kix resources. Part of the reason for showing this description of the application is also to point out the fact that at the bottom there we have the platform. The platform is a definition of the Kix regions that are actually going to be used as part of the application. So that would be determined into the way we have it in that earlier chart with our WORs and our AORs can be defined in terms of a platform. And that would allow us to know into which parts of the platform to deploy both the web service resources and also the actual Kix application that's going to be run as a background. And this is where we come to a question about deployment and structure of the resources. When looking at a web service, as I mentioned earlier, some resources may be fairly generic. The pipeline, the TCP/IP service are likely to be relatively common resources. They're resources that can be shared by multiple applications. So clearly, you don't want to define each one of these individually by application. And that's where we have the ability here to actually bind together resources that belong to the link between the platform, those resources. So if we can define resources like the TCP/IP service to the platform and then the application to them, but ensure that by binding the two together, we're saying that I have to have both parts of this for this to work properly. Move on to page 13, please. So here, yes, the application project itself is actually describing the application. The name is in its version. Versioning is another thing that you may well want to look at, but it's not particularly relevant here, but it's certainly worth investigating. And Kix Bundle's resources, which it, Kix Bundle's the actual physical resources that make up the application, and it's the web service resources that can now be defined to these. And here, the application bindings, the mapping of the bundles to the region types within the platform. And if we move on to page 14, please. This is just to illustrate here via one of the screenshots the fact that in here I'd actually gone into a bundle and then gone to define resources and clicked new, and I've been presented with a list. And here, if you look on the list, we can now see going from the bottom the web service definition, the URI map definition, and also up a little bit higher, the TCP/IP service definition and the pipeline definition. So we have several of the resources that are going to be required for your web service now can all be defined along with the programs and transactions to make an integrated and coherent whole. We move on to page 15. And the platform, just to reiterate what I said earlier, basically it's providing the environment into which the applications are deployed. And the regions are grouped together by their capability and their configuration. Again, our WORs and our AORs. Services can be provided that applications may depend on to operate. And again here, for example, the TCP/IP service and the pipeline are the sorts of resources you'd be expecting to deploy into the platform rather than the application itself. If we can move on to page 16, please. And here, just pointing out here an example of a platform being defined here. The region type where I've actually defined those, so I can just go and select those that we would typically at this point we'd be expecting you to actually define these directly, rather, but you can actually use CPSM groups to make the link. And then you can see there the bundles that actually belong to the platform being actually associated with it, such that when deployed, these will all be linked together. And we can move on to page 17, please. I've just stepped back a little bit. That's all I was going to do on cloud here, but I wanted to point out this other part of Explorer, because it's closely related and it's very helpful. When you actually have a pipeline, in the past you had typically Kix resources that existed in your CSD that you'd go and look at online or in by downloading and using something like DSH, CSDUP. And you'd have data in HFS, for which you'd have to have USS. You'd have to look through the structures to actually find the correct place and to look at them. The two were not together, which made actually understanding exactly how your pipeline was behaving and maybe there was something wrong with it quite hard to find out. In the Kix Explorer, the integration with the ZOS Explorer and the ability to use ZOSMF connections enables you to actually now go to Kix pipeline definitions, for example, and simply by right-clicking on them, it will actually open up an open configuration, give you the opportunity to select open configuration, and that will actually open up a direct link through and show you the actual pipeline as defined in USS. In this one, just for example, we have actually part of the service. You can actually see in there the DFHWS, your authentication and trust. In this case, as an example, this was a basic ICRX. So this would be expecting something from Data Power packaged up with an ICRX coming through to Kix, where it would be mapped with RECF. Okay, if we can move on to page 18. I'll take a short break just for a second there to catch my breath, but also just to reiterate, we're now going to move back into the area of security itself, into the new features that have been coming through primarily I'm going to talk about it in terms of QuickTS 5.2. However, you'll notice on, for example, the SAML assertion, that several of these have actually been back-migrated and provided in the form of feature packs. There are subtle differences to be aware of, but in 5.2, what we're going to talk about is actually an integrated part of the product. So, the SAML assertion, if we move on to page 19. Thank you. So, how does the SAML assertion work? Basically, a web service client makes a request to an identity provider. The identity provider provides the web service client with an assertion that the client is who they say they are, and they are then permitted to perform certain, and they are permitted to perform certain actions. This SAML assertion is typically signed by the identity provider and is then provided to the web service provider. The web service provider itself verifies the signature and can decide whether or not to trust the assertion. So there's a backwards and forwards here between the actual web service client and the identity provider. Can you move on to page 20 now, please? Thank you. Now, when we actually do that validation, what comes through, we recommend that you actually have a dedicated Kix region for the purposes of validation. There are a couple of reasons for that. When you actually come into Kix, you're actually running DFH SAML, which will initiate and run a program in a JVM server. That actually needs to be tuned, therefore, to match that sort of performance, which is not necessarily the way that an awful lot of other work you would want to do. It also, if you actually, you're able to actually use workload management at this point to actually separate the work out, which gives you the ability to avoid a single point of failure when you're actually doing that processing. Another quite important point here is about the Kix region's keyring. If you're using other forms of certificate, there can be clashes that cause a problem. Those hang off the region ID, so the owner of the Kix region. Therefore, by running the SAML validation in a dedicated Kix region, you can have a dedicated region user ID with all key, or just specifically its own separate keyring. Actually, more of the separate keyring is probably a better way of looking at it. That avoids any potential clashes and problems in that area and allows you to maintain both the SAML processing and other forms of processing, secure processing, without any cross-contamination, for want of a better word. That's not the best choice. But if we can move on to page 21. The provider pipeline, as we just saw earlier, for an ICRX example, in here it has SDS authentication, and it gives. And we actually put in here that we are trying to validate. And then, as the STS underscore endpoint, we need to put in here, particularly this is Kix colon, but then the name of the program that you're actually going to be running. In this case, by default, it's DFH SAML. It doesn't actually have to be that by default. You can change it, but that is the default. Which, you know, unless you have a particular need, we wouldn't typically change that.
You change that if you wanted to workload balance it.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, that, okay, if we can move on to page 22. So, yeah, and a SAML assertion basically contains a range of elements, and they are tailorable. But the main part here, the issuer, the subject, a number of conditions, the optional authorization and attribute statements, and optional signatures. We'll come on to this in a little bit more depth in a moment. So if we can carry on to page 23. So, yeah, the IBM supplies security tokens, so the STS, will take a SAML assertion. Now, actually, I don't think I actually mentioned that before. My apologies. Did I mention the fact that the in SAML, you can, in 5.2, you can actually have is the IBM supplied STS token as opposed to an external one. Okay, good, sorry, I'm just double checking because it's quite important. These containers can be examined and used by a customer in pipeline handler to make decisions. For example, and we'll give a little bit of an example in a second, you could extract the user ID you intend to use based upon the email address in the SAML assertion. So it's not necessarily a direct one-to-one correlation, but you're able to process that and use it as you see fit. And details check, SAML will also check the signature it receives is valid. If I remember correctly, there's also a SKU time allowing you to, because it's making sure that the timings are actually in sync between the actual process time and the actual time it is issued. If we move on to page 24. And here, this is one of the actually enhancements. The enhancement, which we'll come into a little bit more in the next page, is actually about the ability to actually now not just do that SAML processing in the inbound, but now to take that SAML information and to reuse it. So if we can move on to page 25. Thank you. So, yes, KIX Web Service Provider Programs manage to invoke a web service outside of KIX using the SAML Association. What we provide for that is we actually provide the SAML Association as part of a new task-based channel called DFH Transaction. That contains things, for example, their DFH SAML-out token, which allows you to pass the information back out on the other side. DFH Transaction being associated with a task, if we move on to the next page, so page 26, we can see there the DFH SAML out token there and the requester pipeline can be actually passed through. Just to refer to you, James, for a second here, DFH transaction is actually persisted across certain types of connection, if I'm rightly correct.
I'm not sure. It's associated with a task. I'll research that for you.
Sure. My apologies. We'll come back to that one. Just something thought for me. If we can move on to page 27 anyway. Sorry, my thing. We've got a couple of examples. We're just going to step through here just for information more than anything else. Some of the XML that goes with this. So here's the SAML assertion. Sorry. And if we move on to page 28. Subject. And then just straight on to page 29. This is more for just general information. You'll notice in here, actually, this is one of the things I just wanted to mention here. In here, we've actually got the SAML name identifier with a format here, which has got an email address in it with our sample tester, so a dummy user ID, the test user, at a spurious URI. But that's the sort of thing where that name could be extracted in the processing and actually used to actually do the sign on. Okay, if we can move on to page 30, and then onto page 31. Sorry, losing track of where I am. James, would you mind actually going through the Kerberos? I think my throat's about to die. I'm just going to hand you over to James O'Grady. If you have any questions in a bit, please do ask back. I'm just going to recover my throat. Hello. This is James O'Grady. At 5.2, we added support for Kerberos tickets, which were previously only supported by using WS Trust, but these are now supported natively inside KIX. It's another form of web service security authentication that works directly with RACF via a key distribution center, one of which runs on ZOS and under a starter task typically called SKRB KDC. A client would typically request a ticket from a key distribution center, which is then used to create a session ticket. And that session ticket is then passed to a third party. A third party can then authenticate this ticket with the original distribution center. And these session tickets typically have a very short lifespan of around 5 minutes. So very, very rapid. If you could move on to slide 32, please. This is a diagram of a typical flow. A web service client will make a request
to an identity provider, for example, Tivoli Federated Identity Manager, which then in turn makes a request to the key distribution center, receives information back, and then builds a Kerberos ticket for the client. The client then makes the web service request to KIX, passing in the Kerberos ticket. KIX transaction server can then validate that ticket directly with the key distribution center on ZOS. If you can move on to slide 33, please. In order to do this, RACS user IDs have to have a Kerberos segment in RACS, which also includes the KIX region itself needing one of these segments. So in the previous example, the user wouldn't provide a RACS user ID to Tivoli Federated Identity Manager, but would in fact supply their Kerberos name, which could be something quite different, and a password. And then once inside KIX, we can then turn this Kerberos name and password inside the ticket into a standard user ID. If you could move on to slide 34, please. So very similarly, again, to the normal pipeline handled for WS Security, it's another form of WS Security with authentication element, but rather than, for example, trust equals none, mode equals basic for user ID and password, you would in turn use trust is basic, mode equals basic, Kerberos, which indicates that I expect to have a Kerberos ticket inside my message. If we can move on to slide 35, please. We also provide an IBM-supplied web service handler to automatically validate Kerberos tickets inside a message, but we also supply an API as well, in case you wish to do it yourself. You have the opportunity to extract a basic 64 encoded Kerberos ticket from inside a web service request and then do a verify token yourself. You also have the opportunity to do this based on the actual original binary form. Both are optional. If we can move on to slide 36, please. This is regarding to Cypher Suite selection, and I know there's an outstanding question on Cypher Suites. At KIX 4.2 and earlier, you could only select Cypher Suites by specifying a series of two-byte hexadecimal codes, which were quite hard to read and didn't allow support for newer, better Cypher Suites, which are four characters in length. At KIX 5.1 and later, the Cypher attribute on TCP/IP services, URI maps, and IP comms allows you instead to specify a name of a file which is stored in the ZFS. If you look at slide 37, please. If you go back to slide 36, sorry. I thought there was more information. We supply three sample files with the source of KIX, which represent, I believe, all Cypher files that we currently support, of which there's a great list. Cypher files that represent what we used to have with the encryption equals strong SIP parameter, and a set of parameters that are conformant to an American government security setting called FIPS. These files can be copied and amended and allow you to choose which files you wish to support and in a more reasonable manner. I know there was an outstanding question on ciphers. If you can move on to slide 37, I'll pass you back to Dave. Dave Key.
Hello, sorry about that. Thank you very much, James. Then we're pretty much, I think, at the closing stage of the new information. The summary of enhancements you'll see here are basically a general release-by-release summary of enhancements to web services. I think they're identical, if not very, very similar, to those provided in the first part of the presentation given by Paul in November 4th. If we can step through to page 38, please. So here's it. I'm going to step through these except where they're specifically relating to some of the bits we've here. So here, this, in version 3.2, WS Trust, use of the TFIM. We go on to page 39. Again, more of this one is just, to a large extent, the consistent and continuous work in terms of improving the performance of web services. That's something which has continued release on release regardless of any of the extra additional functionality. So move on to page 40, please. This is where we're starting to come into things like the feature pack. We mentioned here with SAML, you can, at version 4.2, use the security token extensions feature pack here and do SAML, and it's and then 5.1 and 5.2, it's, well, 5.1 again, it's an extension feature pack, and 5.2 is an integrated part of the product. We move on to page 41. Again, API enhancements and the JAX and Liberty. We'll move on to page 42 from our perspective. Thank you. And here, depending on the COBOL program, that's quite nice. But the mapping levels and yeah. But particularly here, from our point of view, the security enhancements, again, integrating it in here, the Kerberos. There's also enhanced cyber suite, so there's actually some of the actual ciphers that can actually be used have actually been improved and enhanced, and there's actually been some recent changes to that which you need to be aware of, hopefully everyone is. And also there, the cloud style deployment and some of the enhancements to the Explorer. Again, in Explorer enhancements you'll find actually quite often are coming through at a higher rate as well. If we can move on to page 43. Yes, there's our summary here. Before I go to the summary, there's one thing I was just double-checking with James, and I wanted to double-check on with regards to DFH transaction. I did, whilst I was coughing away there, I did have a quick look. DFH, under normal circumstances, a channel doesn't actually persist across a link, whereas unless you passed it, whereas DFH transaction actually is actually maintained across the life of a transaction. There are some examples in the manuals that show that exactly how far a channel under normal circumstances and how far DFH transaction will actually persist. But it is designed to enable you to pass it through in a more complete and thorough way. Okay. Thank you very much. Right, so the summary. Kix is providing that robust and scalable web service infrastructure. It's enabling cloud-based deployment of web services through the Kix Explorer. The web services enable the security interoperability with internal systems and external business partners, and increasingly it's becoming some of our largest customers are using Kix web services as an integral part of their business. So I say we have... it's well worth looking at the red books, which are being updated consistently to actually to reflect the changes that are going through in the product. That's the end of the presentation and the point where questions and answers.
The first one came in to certain slide 8, so I have that up in the web conference right now. It came from Arshia. It said, good day. On slide 8, you mentioned to use specific cipher suites that can be assigned with hardware. I have previously asked IBM via PMR for such a list and was unable to get an answer. Where can we find such a list? Is such information available in the Knowledge Center, SCICS, and the hardware changes?
Hi, this is James. It's not in the Knowledge Center under Kix. It's unfortunately not a Kix thing. However, it's an excellent question, and I'm happy to take it offline and try and get an answer for you, because we need to speak to various people, because it's not a Kix thing, it isn't a ZOS thing, it was a cipher thing, it's a so-and-so. It gets tricky who's responsible for, but I'm happy to take ownership of the question, because it's an excellent question, and we can try and find out for you, if that's okay.
Okay, in that case, what I did is I have presented in the web conference and on slide 1 for those of you that are listening via the phone. That is the title chart. In that chart is the email address for Dave and James. If you would like to send them an email with this question so that they can follow up with you, that would be great. The next question is from Michael, but the question is, is there a reasonable mechanism to define such that would be remote in the TORs and local in the AORs? Another example would be the URI map would be needed in the WORs, but not elsewhere?
Yeah, James will take that one. It's a good question. What we'd recommend is that the application programs that the web services are defined to use would typically be defined as dynamic YES. KickSpecSSN would then route them from the web-only regions to an AOR, where they would then execute. In this environment, you'd have the pipeline, the URI map, and the TCPIP service and the web service in the WOR, and you only need the program definitions in both sets of regions. Mark has a follow-on question. Is there a way of telling KickSpecSSN that certain regions are an AOR or a web-only region? There's not directly in KickSpecSSN. However, if you use the Kix Cloud methodology, you can deploy resources to groups of regions. So, for example, you'd say you have your web-only region and you would directly deploy bundles containing your web services and pipelines to those regions and the programs to other regions. This is covered in the new Cloud Red Book. It describes how to do this in great detail. You can also do it in slightly other ways, not as elegant, but using CSD groups or BAS and resource definitions.
Just to add to what James said, that association in the cloud, that when you define groups of regions, you actually refer to them as region types, and that would be where you'd actually say, this is I consider these systems to be WORs or to be AORs, and they could be both. It's not a prescriptive thing. Once defined, then you can apply those WORs and TORs, sorry, AORs rather, to a platform, which is the overall way in which the infrastructure is designed, and then bind those applications to that platform so that the different resources actually will go into the appropriate part of the system in the appropriate manner. Again, if there's any further follow-up on that required, we're more than happy to take emails and so forth. Or if anyone's got a question now on that, we're happy to take it.
So that extinguishes all the questions. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. I would like to thank you all very much for joining us today, and a special thank you to Dave and James for presenting today. And this was a successful session. So thank you very much. You all have a great day.